It's the Augusta Free Press, and it's on the air. From our studios in downtown Waynesboro, it's the Augusta Free Press Show.
It's pretty much fall now, right, Crystal? I mean, I know the weather still feels very summer-like out there, but it's football season. It's fall. Schools are in session. It's fall, right?
And there's been a breeze blowing all week long, so I guess you could say that. Yeah. You know, I'm not ready to toss in the sandals yet, though. I was just thinking how, you know, September 1st is right around the corner, and we need to start pulling out the fall clothes, and I can't get away with wearing sandals every day to work anymore.
I wear shorts every day, and that's going to change pretty soon as well. Chris Graham, Crystal Graham, Augusta Free Press Show. Last Augusta Free Press Show for August, as we really do move towards the fall months. I mentioned football season. Of course, college games starting this weekend. Virginia, Virginia Tech, JMU, all Bridgewater College. Everybody's got games. High school games starting last week. So I even walked the sidelines for a game. Covered the Waynesboro-Turner-Ashby game. Surprising result there. Turner-Ashby still winning, which was not surprising. But the fact that it was a close game, Waynesboro High School 3-17 the past couple of years, and they availed themselves well, losing only 9-6. And check out my report on that game and the new coach at Waynesboro High School, Steve Isaacs, on the AugustaFreePress.com. But yeah, so you know, Labor Day's around the corner, which means, you know, because there's an election every year in Virginia, that there's a plenty of election stuff to be talking about. And so we have you know, it's pretty much getting to that point of the year.
It is, you know, an election season should be heating up now with the big Labor Day the parade in Buena Vista, which I know you're a big fan of, and just about every politician from the state tries to make the trek there.
That's right. They'll be here in the Valley on Monday. Everybody, the governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, former Governor Warner, expecting Jim Webb, the senator from elected last year, the junior senator from Virginia. And we even have our own election theme here on the Augusta Free Press Show this week. Waynesboro is going to have maybe something of a surprise election, certainly not on the schedule. But they'll have a referendum on some bond issues coming up in the November general election. And we'll be talking with Lori Smith, a member of Waynesboro City Council, about that. Just a couple of months away from that now. And we didn't even have it on a schedule until just recently. So we'll be talking with some of those issues with Lori. Also joining us this week is Don Kane from the Department of Environmental Quality. He's from the regional office in Harrisonburg. We'll be talking about fish kill issues in the river systems in the Shenandoah Valley. And he's helping lead that study into that. Also joining us will be Amanda Huffman from the Economic Development Office in the city of Stanton. Stanton looking through a process that seems interesting to me, looking to create a Stanton brand that they can use to market the city on a tourism sphere. So we'll talk with Amanda about some of those issues.
Yeah, I mean, it already has kind of the Victorian feel. You know, but I've never heard them actually come up with a brand. So that's an interesting concept.
You know, and I already think, when you think about a brand, you know, I think you think, okay, you hear M&Ms, you think of the little chocolate candies, right? I mean, that's
right,
what
right.
A brand means. When I think Stanton, I already think of a brand. I think of the Victorian. I think of the downtown renovations they've done the past 20 years. You think of the Blackfriars Playhouse, American Shakespeare Center now, Stonewall Jackson Hotel. I think of those things. But I guess what maybe they're thinking is they need to define those a little more closely and also figure out a way to sell those to people who aren't necessarily 5 miles away
from
them.
Right, right. Their unique selling points, so to speak. Why come to Stanton, Virginia? What makes it stand out? Of course, you mentioned the American Shakespeare Center. You know, Waynesboro played around with this through their Economic Development Office a few years back as well, trying to create, I don't remember the exact name for it, but I remember it was a furniture. They wanted to be like the furniture capital of Virginia, so to speak, you know, have some of that. And it pretty much, you know, a few things drew here, you know, under the roof, which we don't know the
Waynesboro
status of that
within
right
these
now.
Walls.
That's what it was.
It took me all that time
I know,
thinking
I was
on
sitting
it to
here,
think. I got to think of this.
I went blank. But anyway, you know, and there were a couple of other developments that happened right around that time. But some of the things that were underneath that name, so to speak, have closed. And so you just, you know, have to wonder if it's worth it. I
you
mean,
you got to be dedicated. It's worth it if you're dedicated to it. Whatever you do, any company that creates a brand, you just don't create the brand and then let it wither on the vine and die. So maybe, you know, I'll give Stanton credit. Stanton over the years has developed maybe not a brand yet, But they've developed a reputation. They've developed a feel. And so now they just have to formalize that.
Right. And on the flip side, I think Waynesboro is still looking for its identity. And maybe it needs a little bit more to happen here before that happens, you know, before they can actually name it. There's certainly development on the West End. Don't get me wrong. You know, but the downtown, if you had to define it, I don't think it's there yet.
I think any town could have this problem. Stanton is in a good place. Stanton does have something to brand itself on. But if you're Waynesboro or any number of other towns in Virginia or in America, and your selling point is that you have a Walmart, that's not much to sell yourself on. So, but we'll be talking to Amanda about Stanton's issues there. So, yeah, a lot of good stuff coming up here on the Augusta Free Press Show. We'll be back after this.
Want to know what's going on? Check out our calendar of events and get the complete rundown. The Augusta Free Press, www.augustafreepress.com. Want to know what's going on? Check out our calendar of events and get the complete rundown. The Augusta Free Press, www.augustafreepress.com.
Joining us now on the Augusta Free Press Show is Lori Smith, a Waynesboro City Council member. She's been on the show before, and we've been talking a lot the last few months here in Waynesboro, Lori, about issues with capital improvement projects that have been talked about for years here really in Waynesboro, and now we're close to couple months away possibly from a referendum on a few of these big issues. Thanks for joining us, first of all.
You're welcome, Chris. I'm very happy to be here.
Now, I know we're on a quick time frame here. City Council on Monday night making some key decisions related to this referendum to have a few of these major projects go in front of the voters. And I guess next week it should go to the circuit court. Talk about, this is something that you've supported, this idea of taking this to the voters. Why is this important for Waynesboro to be able to weigh in on these issues?
Well, Chris, I think mainly the citizens, from what I can gather and from those that have contacted me, really appreciate the opportunity to weigh in on these very specific projects that really go to enhancement of services in our city. And we didn't, of course, get all the projects approved on our previous bond that we just adopted. So this is another way of engaging the citizens, and it's also another way to try to capture as many of these projects as we can.
Stormwater improvements, the fire station, I guess other issues, the ball fields, I think, are on this. It's six different projects overall, but two of them are lumped into one. So it's really five issues that people will be looking at there.
That's right. That's exactly right. We've got the fire substation and the associated land as one item. The ball field complex and the Ridgeview Park improvements, the lighting basically is one item. The library expansion and our sidewalks and crosswalks. And we also have, of course, the stormwater projects.
Now, some of these issues, I think we talked about this before, some of these issues have already gone through approval, not these particular issues, but the general list of capital improvements projects were talked about just a month or two ago and got some preliminary approval there. But we couldn't get approval on the city council. You need a supermajority, a 4-1 majority to have these kind of bond issues go out there. And so it was a 3-2 vote split on some of these issues, and that's why I guess we're looking for guidance from the voters. One issue that I have, though, is I wonder if there's even, say, a bare majority of support for this. This is non-binding, I'm guessing, so that might not necessarily change things necessarily as among the votes on council.
Well, you know, after the referendum is completed and the citizens have weighed in, the council is back at the premise of having to go to a vote on an additional borrowing.
Yes.
And so that, again, requires that supermajority vote or 4 out of 5 votes. I do think this time, you know, in my opinion, that the bar is a bit higher because, you know, when the citizens begin to weigh in and we get projects hopefully approved on the referendum, I think it becomes increasingly difficult for the council not to be responsive to that. You know, so I think that this may change a bit in terms of what we see of being able to get those 4 votes. That's my hope.
Yes. Talking with Lori Smith here from Waynesboro City Council member here on the Augusta Free Press Show. One thought that I had, too, as I was looking at this, when the idea first came up a little bit ago, was that, of course, we have a city election coming up in May. That's essentially, you could look at it's going to be a referendum on certain things. Certainly the two ways of thinking right now in Waynesboro that are so different in terms of approaching city matters. So we're going to have now one in November and one in May. Could that almost be too much in terms of going to the voters and asking them their thoughts?
Well, in terms of the projects, I really feel that going to the voters for the projects in November is really the most efficient way to go about it. I think that, you know, crowding the spring election ballot, where we have, you know, some significant seats up, both on the school board and on the council, I think that tends to muddy the waters a little bit. And I would much rather see the citizens be able to focus on these projects, become informed about these projects over the next couple of months, so that we can all look at this and make educated decisions on this. And then I think, pretty much, Chris, the projects that don't get approved, or some of the, you know, other initiatives of council, you know, I think those become election issues, frankly, for some of the candidates in the spring.
I think that will be the case, too. This almost being a precursor to next May. In that sense, we're talking with Lori Smith here on the Augusta Free Press Show. And so the next couple of months, obviously we're looking at next week with getting that circuit court approval just to get it on the ballot. I'm sure that's hopefully just a rubber stamp, and we can look forward to November and a hearty discussion in the next little bit of time. What do you think we need to do? I mean, obviously we need to, as a community, discuss these issues thoroughly so that we know by November where we really stand.
Right. I think that the discussion will be healthy, Chris. I know from a city administrative and council perspective that we're looking to put together some informational pamphlets that will be available to citizens and hopefully readily available at the library and so forth and at City Hall, so that we can begin to outline what these projects actually pertain to and what they will affect. And it will be strictly educational. It will not be in a partisan format at all. It will have no bias in terms of viewpoints on council. It will be a strictly objective document. And it's my hope that the citizens will get engaged in the information. I know that I've talked to a lot of citizens over just the last week. We've got some folks starting to ask to see, for instance, the West End Fire Department plans. So I sense some enthusiasm in our community at this point, that the voters are feeling that they can really get vested in where our city's headed. And I think it's pretty much contagious at this point. So I am excited to be part of this process, and I think the citizens are going to weigh in a very healthy way and give us some direction on what they desire.
Now, outside of that formal process, do you anticipate there being any, so to speak, jockeying for position here? Because, you know, obviously there are strong opinions on both sides of this issue here. As much as it's good to give unbiased information, and I don't know that biased information is wrong, because people do have strong opinions on this.
Yeah, biased information, I don't need to infer that it's wrong. I just know that the council legally, we cannot advocate or for these projects in a biased way with the community. And we've got to kind of sit back from a legal perspective and just make sure that the oversight of the information is objective and educational in nature. Certainly, I think the council's been very well defined in terms of how we feel about these projects. I think, you know, we had 4 votes out of 5 for the capital improvement plan itself. The wheels pretty much came off when we went to discussing how we were going to fund the CIP, and that's where we failed to get the 4 votes. So I think really where it came down to being difficult is how we were going to fund them. So that's what we have in front of us, you know, as we said earlier here, after we move past referendum.
Well, the next couple of months should be very interesting in Waynesboro as people discuss these issues more and more. Hopefully, people like us here at the Augusta Free Press and the other media in the area can help foster that discussion.
So, I would appreciate that very much, Chris.
Well, I'm sure we'll be working on that. Well, Lori, thanks for your time today, and I'm sure we'll have you back when we talk about this again in the future.
It's been my pleasure.
We want to know what you're thinking. Comment on stories. Vote in our polls. Get the discussion started. The Augusta Free Press, AugustaFreePress.com. You can't tell the players without a scorecard. Elections 2007, your one-stop shop for this year's elections.
Joining us now on the Augusta Free Press Show is Don Kamen. He's works in the Department of Environmental Quality office in Harrisonburg, and really involved in this fish kill issue. For people out there who've been following this for a while, some mysterious fish kills have popped up over the years in the Shenandoah River systems. And Don, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be able to help.
Now, tell us where you are right now and where the DEQ is in terms of this study of trying to figure out what's going on here.
Well, for unfortunately, the fish kills for this year have been over with for a couple of months now.
Mm-hmm.
These fish kills are very unusual and mysterious, and they just don't fit the patterns of typical events where fish are killed. More normally, you would have a release of some material or some toxic condition or inhospitable condition in the environment, and fish die pretty much all at once and in a specific location. What's happened here in the Shenandoah is we've had long-term fish kills in the spring months of each of the last 3 years, and what happens during those events is we really only lose a few fish at a time, but it happens over an extended time period. So the impact on the population is significant, but it almost goes unnoticed by folks the way it happens. But the pattern has been once we get into the month of June, about by mid-June, we don't see any more problems with the fish, and that's one of the mysteries of these fish kills.
Yeah, the mysteries of it happens at a certain time of year, it ends at a certain time of year, and it's not. There was an incident recently, I guess a month or two ago, in Rockingham County that was, as you mentioned, it was very specific. It was a discharge from a wastewater treatment plant that led to a fish kill there. But we knew what that cause was. These others are still, I guess, you're still trying to figure out what's going on there.
That's exactly right. You know, the recent fish kill you mentioned, there was a smoking gun in that case,
yeah.
And that was very easy to deal with. Still an unfortunate event, but something that we can handle and we can correct and hopefully prevent from happening in the future. With these longer term fish kills that recur each year during the spring months, it's not nearly that simple. We have evaluated water quality data and done much more intensive sampling than we've ever done in the past to try to determine if there is a clear water quality factor or culprit causing these fish kills. We've not found anything that we believe is capable of causing those problems. We're also looking at some of the more subtle things, such as metals that may be accumulating over time in fish tissue, and also some things that are much more difficult to detect, and that could be an unknown biological pathogen, whether it's a virus, a bacteria, fungus, or even something that has not yet been found in this area, but might have been transported in some manner and shown up in our streams. And it's really tough. It's a shot in the dark, kind of a needle in the haystack type of a scenario when you're looking for an unknown like this.
We're talking with Don Kane from the DEQ office in Harrisonburg, and I'm sure this question comes up, these issues that are affecting fish and killing fish every spring here in our valley. Do we know yet if whatever is causing this could be harmful to humans as well?
Well, we don't have any evidence that it could be harmful to humans, and I don't have any reports that people have had any problems either after handling these fish or after being in the water where some of the fish have been dying. I think common sense is really what people should use, and even in a healthy system without fish kills, the kind of good hygiene practices that you would use after being outdoors, washing your hands, handling food at the same time you're handling these fish. You know, those same practices apply and probably should be more strongly emphasized. But we're certainly not aware of any human health threat that's associated with these fish kills.
Now, and if I understand right, too, from the research I've done on this in the past, these are rivers that basically empty into streams and rivers that empty into the Shenandoah River, which of course empties eventually into the Potomac and then into the bay. And I know that we're looking into bay issues, bay cleanup issues across the state. I guess this is an important study then, maybe in terms of that as well.
Well, if nothing else, we're certainly getting a lot of data that is helpful for the folks studying the Chesapeake Bay and its tributaries. We probably have learned more about the Shenandoah in terms of its water quality, the fish communities, the aquatic insects and other aquatic life that live in the river over the last 3 to 4 years. That probably more information has been gathered on the Shenandoah and its tributaries than any other rivers in the state. So that's always good information, and it'll tell us a lot about what's going on with the river, not just in terms of the fish kills, but other types of problems or concerns, whether it be nutrients or sediment loads or whatever. It's also a very good baseline that we can use for comparison when data are collected in the future. We've really studied the Shenandoah in great detail, and I think that'll have a number of benefits.
Don Kane from the DEQ office in Harrisonburg. We're talking about the fish kill issue here in the valley. One more question, Don, and then I'll let you go. I read a report maybe a week or two ago, maybe longer than that, where there were some concerns listed basically about the availability of monies, grant monies maybe, that could help fund further studies. Are there issues there with the study being able to continue that obviously until we know, we'd like to be able to continue this, I'm sure.
Well, Chris, that's always a concern. It's a very good question, and I'd say a timely question, too. We've completed basically all of our field work for 2007, and we've got a number of samples that are being analyzed in the laboratory right now, but we really need to gear up for 2008. We haven't found the answer yet. We've got a lot of partners working with us, and all of these studies cost money. So, yes, funding is an issue. We certainly have been fortunate the last several years in that the General Assembly and the Governor have supported us financially in these studies. We've also gotten very good support from the federal government. EPA has been very involved, U.S. Geological Survey, and there have been some private foundations and outside groups that have funded specific studies. We've had a study that the Friends of the North Fork, for example, did that they were able to obtain funding through a couple of private foundations that helped us tremendously. So we have a group that we formed with the Shenandoah River Fish Kill Task Force, a subgroup that focuses specifically on funding, and we try to diversify and get funding from as many sources as we can, because we know there's always a challenge and a lot of competition for all of that money.
Well, Don, we wish you the best of luck as that goes on, and we'll have you on again soon as we continue to follow this issue and get an update on how things are going.
Well, thank you very much, Chris.
The place to go to find local news and views. Our news and blogs link at AugustaFreePress.com. Your portal into the valley, the Augusta Free Press, www.AugustaFreePress.com.
Joining us now on the Augusta Free Press Show is Amanda Huffman. She works in the Economic Development Office in the city of Stanton, and she's got an exciting project on her plate for the next few months, creating a brand for the city of Stanton. Amanda, tell us, a brand for a city. This is, we're familiar with Coca-Cola or M&M's or Nike, but for a city, it's something of a new concept for some of us.
Yes, and many cities actually do this. If you think about... and actually bigger than cities, like states actually do this. For example, if you think of Virginia is for Lovers, that's a brand that's been in existence since the 70s and is very well known. A lot of the islands actually just now have started marketing themselves in the Bahamas as they actually have a brand, an image that captures the kind of the idea of island hopping in the Bahamas. So localities are doing this, and in the example of Virginia have been doing this for quite some time. Stanton has not done this previously. We have several different organizations that have their own brands, but we've never actually approached it in a more collective sense. So that's what we're really trying to do with this project.
So the first, I guess this week is really a kickoff meeting with different groups in the city to get some input on this and talk about the process, if you could, of how this is going to come about.
Sure. Basically, the process started, of course, you know, the selection process started with, you know, an RFP where we had several applications. We interviewed several different firms that had given us proposals, went through an extensive evaluation process and interview process, and chose Arnett Muldrow out of Greenville, South Carolina, because of their experience with helping communities brand and identify themselves. And they've helped probably close to 100 communities throughout the U.S. Do this, and so that's why we just thought that their expertise and skill level and their experience really matched our needs. But then from there, actually last month, one of their representatives came to Stanton for about 2.5 days. They did a community familiarization tour and photo shoot, and that's part of the deliverables that we'll receive when the project is over, is we'll actually have, you know, a significant compilation of photos that have been taken over the, you know, a period of about 4 months. And then this next part that actually just was this week was basically the community input portion of the process, where we actually talked to several different groups, groups like the Garden Club, groups like the Newtown Association, things like that, and then, of course, had the public meeting to try to get as much input as possible. And we're continuing that along the next couple weeks with the blog that's available on the Newsleader website. People can email in ideas. They can call with ideas. We really want to have as much input as we possibly can get. After we've received the input, probably around, we're going to run this through the second week of October, or excuse me, of September, the consultants will begin drafting ideas, and they'll come back in September and actually work with staff to figure out, you know, they'll present us with about five different, you know, mock-ups of what they think might work. And at that point, it's actually going to be a working project where we'll actually sit down with them and say, okay, we like the concept here, but we'd like the concept here, and is there any way to merge those two? And then actually, that will actually be almost like a, you know, a design in process right then and there. Mm-hmm. And then what we'll do is, once we have that that design and that image firmed up, then we'll come back in October and actually do a public presentation and launch that brand.
Very good. Well, Amanda Huffman joining us here on the Augusta Free Press Show, talking about the branding process that the city of Stanton's going through right now. Are we talking about something, I mean, it's going to be an image, you know, like a Nike swoosh or the I Love New York iconic image we remember from back in the 70s and 80s. An image plus maybe something else there, too, in terms of just something that identifies Stanton. Talk about what we're actually going to get at the end of this process.
Well, we'll hopefully have it'll be definitely be an icon, you know, something that is a graphic representation, but there may actually also be a tagline or a logo, if you will. There may be that, you know, if we find something that really seems to fit with Stanton.
Sure.
We're careful to explain that we're not trying to give Stanton a theme or pigeonhole Stanton, because Stanton's a complex place and it's a diverse place, and that's the beauty of Stanton, and that's what we all appreciate about Stanton. And so, you know, we're not trying to say, okay, Stanton is only this. It's basically just a way to kind of symbolize Stanton. And when you see that, you think, oh, that's Stanton. And of course, that'll take many years. But
yeah.
So we'll have, you know, we'll have the image. We'll also have, hopefully, a tagline. We'll also have a way to, you know, multiple organizations will be able to use this image will come with design guidelines and how to, you know, use it. And so that other organizations could actually then begin to use Stanton and this image in a consistent format, so that whenever someone sees that, it begins to have more recognition.
I understand this process really well in terms of I've written a couple of books, and you would think that, okay, you write a book, 300 pages, whatever, and there's a lot of work that goes into that. The easiest thing to do would be to think of a 4 or 5 word title to describe this book. That's the hardest thing in the world to do, and to try to encapsulate a 25,000 resident city with all the diversity that Stanton has into an image and maybe a couple of words, if that is appropriate. That's got to be it's a tough process.
Yes, it is. I mean, this is something that over the past year, you know, I've worked for the city of Stanton now for about a year and a half, and over the past year, my boss, Bill Hamilton, and I have scratched our heads on this, and, you know, every once in a while we'll sit down and brainstorm on how do we do this, and so that's what really why we brought in the experts. And what's interesting is that it's kind of like, you know, with a relationship, you feel like that you're so entrenched in the relationship, it actually helps to have someone from the outside come in and look at the situation to be able to objectively review everything about the situation. Well, it's the same thing with this. You know, we've brought in a consultant that can look more objectively at the situation and really analyze Stanton with fresh eyes. And we hope from out of that process we'll get something that's quality and really, it provides meaning for Stanton in a you know, cohesive format that then can be cooperatively used throughout Stanton.
So people still have the chance to have some input. You said the Newsleader has a blog up. Is there also a link on the Stanton City website?
I think that we are working on that. I don't think it's up yet, but we are working to have a link from the Stanton website. But then, yes, the News Leader has a blog up. Also, we had a couple ads in the Stanton News Leader, both, I guess that was Tuesday and Wednesday. Mm-hmm. The people can, there's actually a number in there. So if you have Tuesday or Wednesday's paper, you can actually look in that, and there's an ad in there with some different questions and also a phone number and also an email address where you can actually submit your ideas electronically if you have that capacity, or you can actually just write us, and it actually has an address there where you can actually send your ideas in into our PO box.
Very good. Well, we'll direct people to the websites and also to the I'll get that information, and we'll have that on our website so people can have the opportunity to weigh in on the brand, because once we have a brand, we want to get it out there. So
right, that's right.
We all want to have input. Well, Amanda, thanks for your help with this, and we'll follow up as we get to that process where we actually have maybe a brand to unveil. That'll be exciting.
Yes, that will be exciting.
Links to Valley attractions, dining options, government and politics links, and more. The Scene. Check it out. AugustaFreePress.com. Headlines from across the valley. The Morning Edition. Weekdays at AugustaFreePress.com.
Once again, I want to thank our guests, Lori Smith, member of Waynesboro City Council, also Don Kane from the DEQ office in Harrisonburg, and Amanda Huffman talking about the city of Stanton and the branding process that they're going through. And that's interesting. And Crystal, we work in this field, the marketing and advertising field, and we're used to this, branding, putting names on books and magazines and everything else. But it's interesting to see a city go through this.
Yeah, you as the writer, you have any ideas you want to throw out there for consideration?
I was thinking about that when I was interviewing her and thinking, maybe give me some time. Maybe I can think of something there. But it's tough to think, you're trying to sum up 25,000 residents, a diverse city like Stanton, in a picture and maybe two or three or four words. That's hard to do. Harder to do than you would think, so... Thanks, Amanda, for joining us. Well, we're to our point where we discuss the big news of the week across the Augusta Free Press region. It's the morning edition every weekday morning on the Augusta Free Press. We link to headlines from newspapers and blogs across the area. And more news in Stanton we'll stick with here first, Crystal. And we're going to write about this on our Augusta Free Press. It's going to be our top story of the week tomorrow in our Friday edition. Stanton City Council is looking at moving their local city elections from May to November. And we've talked with Dickie Bell, a city council member, also talked to some people. We talked to Lori Smith in Waynesboro, also Mayor Tom Reynolds, and over in Charlottesville, where they've actually gone through this process, talked to Mayor David Brown and city council member Dave Norris. They've moved their city elections. For the first time, they will be in November this year. What are your thoughts? Do you think that's a good idea?
I don't know. This issue comes up so often in, every election pretty much. I mean, cost-wise, yes, I can see the benefit. Now, the flip side to that is that the people who are running for council and things of that nature feel like they get more attention if you actually run in May versus November, where you're usually clouded by either presidential or statewide elections. So that does play into it. I mean, ultimately, I know it's a struggle always to get poll workers, volunteers there at the polls on election day and everything else. And not to mention in this day of fiscal responsibility that perhaps this is the way to go.
It's interesting. In Stanton, they're talking about it's a $7,500 a year savings. Charlottesville, it was $35,000. Now I'm wondering how it's different, that much different between cities that are 40 miles apart. But whatever the cost savings, there is a cost savings, and you're right. It's difficult to get those poll workers. You're talking about people who pretty much have to devote a weekday, a Tuesday, from 6 a.m., which is when the polls open, to 7, really from 5 to about 8 in terms of opening the polls and closing them, a couple times a year. Virginia, we don't have off years in elections. We actually have elections every year. So it's two Mays out of those 4 years where we need additional help. It's an issue. I understand that. And yet I also agree with you that it seems to me that even though turnout's lower in May, the people who come out and vote actually care enough to vote. Whereas if you have a presidential election year, for example, you might have a lot of people who don't even know what the issues are. Oh, by the way, I'll go ahead and vote for somebody. So, a lot of issues to discuss there, but Stanton looks like they're going to be holding some public forums on this to get some more citizen input. And what's interesting is Dickie Bell, who I talked to for the story, said that he's been hearing about this really since he's been on city council. I think he's in his third term now, finishing up his third term. He's been hearing this all along. Why don't you move the elections from May to November? I talked with Lori Smith and Tom Reynolds. Now, Lori's new on city council in Waynesboro. Tom has been there. He's finishing up his second term here. It's never come up. Never heard from a constituent. It's never come up on council. So 10 miles apart, mm-hmm. you know, two different perspectives there. But
well, I think Waynesboro is going to have to evaluate what the cost is of having that May election and maybe look at it again.
That's certainly the case. So could be the case. So interesting issue there. Well, more from our morning edition this week. The three candidates for this 24th Senate district race held their first debate. I guess you can call it a debate. It was a forum on the Insight program on WMRA on, I think it was on Monday of this week. You could probably still listen to that. Go to WMRA.org, their archives on mm-hmm. Insight. You can definitely pull that down and listen to what the three candidates had to say on the issues. And you know, I won't go into too much of what they discussed there, but what's interesting is just the fact that they are actually getting together. And hey, we're gonna try to put a good word out here. We've got two of the three to agree to a candidates forum in Waynesboro in October. Still working on Evan Hanger. I think that's going to come through. So we'll be able to do the same thing. But it's good to get everybody together and talking about the issues.
Well, I think everybody's ready to talk about the issues. Now, when the primary was up earlier this year, I don't think anybody was quite ready to talk about the election. But now they are. I think as voters, we're ready to hear all sides of this. And it's an interesting mix this time because we have a Democrat and we have a Republican. But then we also have Aaron Syme in the mix. It's a good mix of the three candidates and hearing their positions on the issues. And I think, you know, as more of these forums start to pop up, and I imagine there will be several more between now and the election, it'll be great to continue to hear their opinions on the issues of the day.
And we mentioned when I talked with Lori Smith earlier in the show that, of course, with the referendum coming up in Waynesboro, it's going to be incumbent upon someone, and I guess that someone will be us, to arrange a forum there, too, to have a thorough discussion of the issues involved in that referendum on bond issues in Waynesboro. So we'll be working on that, too. Hopefully we can get something together for that in October so Waynesboro residents can have more than – it's great that the city's talking about putting out some informational guidelines, nonpartisan, I guess we could say, because it won't really say, oh, this is great or it's the worst thing in the world. But it's one thing to put out a pamphlet that gives, you know, that kind of information. I think a thorough discussion by people who really care about both sides will also help residents to form some opinions as well. I'm going to throw one sports thing in real quick, Crystal. It's kind of a blast from your past. JMU basketball, a recent trip to Spain. Dean Keener in his fourth season now at JMU. Kind of a make it or break it year for him. He's got a 5-year contract. They haven't really been making some progress since Dean replaced Sherman Dillard. And I bring this up because you had Dean Keener on when he first got hired on the show Virginia Tonight that you used to host.
Yeah, that was a number of years ago. But, you know, I know he was very excited about being there and being a part of the program. You know, it's always difficult to turn around a program, even in 5 years. And, you know, some of your UVA folks can attest to that as well. But, you know, I haven't kept up with the program that much over the past, you know, 4 years that he's been here. But certainly I know that's always a struggle with coaches. You know, they have the worst job in the world. I mean, they, you know, they're dependent on their seasons. They're depending on their winning record, you know, and that's got to be one of the hottest seats, I guess, of any job, you know, out there.
Yeah, you work really hard to get these jobs and then you get them. And, you know, it just depends on what your ability to recruit and then win some games. Of course, he's in his fourth season and a lot of people are saying he needs to make a significant stride this year or there might not be a fifth. I mean, I don't think they would fire him, but if they don't extend his contract, it's pretty much the writing is on the wall there. And of course, Dean came to Harrisonburg with a lot of acclaim. He had just served as the assistant coach for a Georgia Tech team that had been in the Final Four, like maybe a few days before he was announced as the coach. So, but a good trip to Spain. Let's give him some props here. Some of college teams get to go on these foreign trips, I think, once every 4 years. What it does is give them a chance to practice early, play early. They play some games, get to travel a little bit, and they did really well there. So hopefully it's a good sign for JMU this year. Well, thanks for joining us on the Augusta Free Press Show. Had a great week.
We'll see you next week. The Augusta Free Press Show is a production of Augusta Free Press Publishing, all rights reserved. For more on the Augusta Free Press, check out our website, augustafreepress.com. That's augustafreepress.com.